Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, the 25th of April. I'm Alicia Seckham, coming to you live from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg, as we wrap up, the last week of another trading month of the year. What a speed it's going at. On the show today, after what was a rough week last week, Nick Kunzer helps us set the market scene for today and the week ahead, with the Fed's hawkish tone still loud and clear. Sam Okorosi, head of origination and deals at the JSC, chats us through Signia's most recent listing of an ETF targeting China and Hong Kong, and how ETF listings like these could potentially help build some JSC muscle. And Patrick Matidi, who's head of equity and balanced funds at Aluwani Capital Partners, joins us with a focus on Capitec. Where are its business banking aspirations taking it? And does that help justify its share price? The show brought to you by Standard. Visit standard.com to get in touch with their investment specialists. Standard Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Right, getting straight into your markets now. Of course, on Friday, we had U.S. markets close in the red, the S&P 500 losing 2.7%, the Dow weaker, down by a similar margin, 2.8% lower, and the Nasdaq not far behind, dropping 2.5% by its finish. As I alluded to at the top, the market's feeling the reverberations of Fed Chair Jerome Powell's hawkish commentary, and with that still hovering, coupled with the potential fallout of prolonged lockdowns in China as well. Asia trading in negative territory too today. We've got the Nikkei in Tokyo losing about 1.7% at this point. The ASX in Sydney, 1.6% lower. The commodities corner in negative territory too. Gold sitting at $1,923.62 an ounce. A platinum at about $931. And Brent crude moving lower steadily, $103.15 a barrel. We've got the rand seeing weakness creeping through very slowly too. 1564 is where the local unit is at against the greenback. And then, of course, where on Friday we had on the local bourse, both the all-share and the top 40 closing roughly 1.5% down on the day. Looking at the top 40 opening call for today, 1.5% in the red. So we're anticipating, like with its global peers, a red day across the board. Joining me now to take a closer look at the markets, Nick Kunzer from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, good morning. Nice to be catching up again. I mentioned there hawkish commentary from the Fed still lingering. We're sitting on the cusp of May, more than likely ushering, a 50 basis point increase in interest rates. Nomura expecting 75 basis points in the June-July meeting. So right at the top, talk us through the implications here for markets of rates going up and going up quickly.
Yeah. Morning, Alicia. After that sort of intro, I'm glad it's only a four-day week. It really is a lot on the plate in a very, very negative tone, as you pointed out. Look, there's a number of things in play. Firstly, obviously, the inflation concerns continue to reverberate. Supply chains, you spoke about the lockdowns in Shanghai causing problems. And then you have to look no further than the commodities, what they're doing on the back of a rampant dollar. Interest rates are forecast to rise anywhere up to about 2.75%. That's significantly higher than it is now. And that's going to have a real effect on risk. Fortunately, in that sort of environment, your traditional places to hide are no longer there. Bonds are selling off, equities are selling off, commodities are selling off. And we might get a little bit of guidance this week. There's a lot of big caps that are reporting this week, mega caps out of America. So maybe a bit of, but on the back of it, and very, very long summary, is it's risk off. It's a risk off Monday morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll be drilling into some of the expectations as far as U.S. corporate earnings are concerned in just a bit. Before we do, it's all that momentum that's on the greenback side, right? I came across some trend analysis out of Refinitiv data, though, which highlighted that in three out of the last four hiking cycles, the dollar index went on to par some of its gains. So some saying it's possible that the dollar overshoots on the high side and then pars those gains. So how much short-term, longer-term distinction needing to be made here?
So I think there's some truth in that in the short term, it looks like the dollar's run a little bit too hard. And I'm not just talking about sort of against the rand and a few of the other crosses, just in general. You know, that dollar index well over 100 now. It does look like it's gone a little bit too far. If you look at what the bond markets have done, but it clearly is just all about this dollar. If I look at, against the euro, for example, I mean, it's sitting at close to 106, 107 against the sterling. It's sitting at also these levels. So there is clearly more to go on this dollar. And as we know, what the dollar does to commodities, unfortunately, which explains why the rand is doing what it's doing.
And this, even if we're looking at a robust U.S. corporate earnings season, right, improving jobless claims data, which already suggesting that April's going to be another month of strong jobs growth. We're anticipating Q1 GDP numbers stateside tomorrow. Where your expectations sitting there?
Yeah, I think the U.S. economy continues to go from strength to strength. You know, a couple of months ago, it was sort of people were muting over the idea that, given what China did last year, and given what the U.S. had done, you know, maybe possibly the trade was to be long China and short the U.S. But of course, that's proven to be completely wrong, because the U.S. just goes from strength to strength. So, you know, I think the Fed have got a tough choice, Alicia. They've got to weigh up, you know, their mandate. They've got a lot of mandates, not just unemployment; it's also inflation. So, they've got to raise interest rates. They are behind the curve. But they're doing that. I guess the comfort is, if you are an investor in America, the comfort is they're raising rates against the backdrop of a very strong employment rate and a strong economy. So it's a balancing act, but you'd be wrong to bet against the Fed getting it right. I think they get it right this time.
Okay, so what's your thinking then on how that stronger dollar translates for that earnings picture moving forward? Because we've seen companies that derive revenues from abroad citing, you know, currency headwinds in the season's earnings report. The stronger dollar, of course, hurting the translation of their earnings, hurting international competitiveness. But hand in hand with that, we've heard how big companies have been able to pass on soaring costs to the consumers, and that then working to allay some fears that higher prices could dent, you know, any demand in sales.
Sure. So against an American backdrop, when you've got employment rate at 3.7%, I mean, let's call it full employment, raising costs onto the consumer. We've seen Walmart, we've seen a couple of the big techies, see Netflix recently, Alicia, also saying that they're going to possibly have to stem some tide by raising sort of their subscription rates as well. So it depends how much the consumer can take it. But against a full employment rate, I think they can. But overall, for a country like America, strong dollar is not ideal. Yeah. I do think it's going to subside a little bit. It's run a little bit ahead of itself.
Let's bring things local very quickly. Rand weakness we're seeing creep through. Is that more so a feature of that dollar strength and commodity prices coming off a bit? Or, you know, are local factors like floods, the power cuts, and how that's going to hit South Africa's economic growth coming to bear? And as you answer that, I came across a headline, bet against the rand at your own risk. So how do you see this rand momentum moving?
So I think the rand, as always, is so difficult to forecast. But in this particular case, I think it's all of the above. I think for the first time in a while, we had some decent sort of tailwinds to start the year with rampant commodity prices. We had Moody's giving us a sort of benefit of doubt and sort of upgrading our outlook. And there was a few positive sentiments for the first time in a while, which saw the rand becoming the best performing currency against the dollar at the start of the year. But I mean, how quickly that turns, because the rand is now the weakest against the dollar in the space for the last 5 trading days. And I think what you just said on your intro, all of the above, you know, local factors clearly having an effect. The floods in the KZN is not helping. Eskom not helping. Commodities selling off the last few days not helping. So the rand has a few tailwinds. But overall, I wouldn't say it's the end of the rand. I think we'll probably find the level round about where we are now, 1550, 1560. Maybe it trickles out to 16, but it also depends on our friends at the Saab do as well. If we get a 25 or 50 basis point hike quite quickly, we might get some strength back in the rand. And don't forget, this is also in the emerging market space. It's been a while since emerging markets have led the US and developing markets on interest rate rises. So we could quite easily get ahead of the curve a little bit. I think the emerging market central banks are doing a good job. So, but I think be comfortable the rand round about where it is now, 15.50 for the next couple of weeks.
Let's leave it there. Nick, always a pleasure chatting to you. Thanks so much for your early morning contribution on the show today. Nick Quinzo is with Sanlam Private Wealth.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Patrick Matidi, who's head of equity and balanced funds at Aluwani Capital Partners, joining me now to put the spotlight on Capitec for a bit. Patrick, good morning. Thanks for joining us. So I saw the headline last week, BD Live running on the back of an FM article, and I thought to myself, how many times have we read a similar headline? Has Capitec run out of steam? So how much added impetus do you see its banking business arm, with a target on SMEs in particular, adding?
Yeah, good morning, Anish, and thanks for having me. Look, I think the story with Capitec, it's always polarizing, as you say. You have those who are forever believers, who think that they can turn, literally anything into gold. And then you've got the skeptics, who kind of sit back and think, well, looking at the past, certainly they've done very, very well. This is a bank that is 20 years old and has literally run past the Big Four in terms of market share and in terms of market cap. But then, as we all know, trees do not grow to the sky. At some stage, things level off. And I guess that's where, the debate sits as to, do we think that what they've achieved in the retail space, they can do in the business banking side, especially with SMEs. Certainly, there is a cause, for believing, literally looking at the past. But I think the SME space is highly, highly contested, in South Africa. And I think the winner, to me, is not that clear cut. I think all of the other guys have certainly got strategies to try and win market share in the space. And I think it's too early as yet to pronounce a winner from what we're seeing.
That being said, though, the kind of growth we've been seeing in Capitec's business banking unit, it's been adding, 1,500 clients a month as recently as March, a total of more than 125,000 accounts held at the year end in February. What are you making of that kind of traction it's able to garner?
Look, I think number of clients being lauded is one statistic, but I think the important number is how profitable are those clients coming in. So we've seen other players, the likes of Time and others, especially on the digital side, where they're loading hundreds and thousands of clients, but there's no activity on those accounts. So literally money comes in on per day, then it goes out the next day. So I think in the case of Capitec, especially in the SME space, we'll have to see who is able to monetize that client base as and when they load those clients with their books.
Yeah, if we home in on that client base, the target market for this unit are businesses with a turnover of less than 100 million rand a year. How much risk is the bank taking on here in what's become an increasingly tough, high-cost operating environment for business that's not necessarily high demand right now? Or is this the only way that a player like Capitec actually takes on the legacy banks, your traditional players?
Look, I think a lot of studies have been done, and it shows that that part of the segment within the SME space is literally ignored. So the big banks don't are playing there because of the risks, and also, I guess, because of the legacy systems where they have no real product you can offer. And I think this is a way Capitec can actually make a difference if they are able to come up with a credible process, product and a process that enables that part of the market to actually be onboarded and offer them a credible service at a decent price. So I think, as I said in the article, I think they certainly are at the forefront, you know, having identified the part of the market. But I think, you know, the taste of the pudding will be whether they are able to actually offer them a decent product at a decent price, which then turns profitable, you know, in Capitec's books.
Yeah, especially
when
you've got these small businesses focusing on costs, focusing on fee structure in a very big way. And if fee structure is going to be one of its, you know, its levers that it pulls, Patrick, and if that's the basis, what's the collateral that Capitec will have to demand? Because rates are rising and it's got to offset the risk to non-performing loans and defaults in some way, right? But that micro lender reliant on charging high interest rates is going to be a hard one for any SME to stomach.
Look, I think the way Capitec are going about it is actually very clever in that, you know, they're loading those customers, they're looking at activity within their accounts, and then they're lending on the back of activity. So if you're a micro lender, you're going to account with Capitec, you know, and only about, let's say, 1,000 rands, you know, goes through your account, you know, on a monthly basis, and you come around and then want a loan for 100,000, clearly don't work, because they can see clearly through your account that actually you've not generated enough revenue to can afford servicing that loan. So they're almost going the behavioral way of banking, where they look at how you behave and how you conduct account, and then starting off small, you know, to see if indeed you can handle credit. And as your business grows and it shows through the activity in account, hopefully they can lend you a bit more. But I think, you know, again, it's a small start, you know, in an area that, as we, you know, we've been saying, is highly contested, it's highly risky. Mm. And then I say, look, you know, the jury's still out. I mean, it's a long road to go. I wouldn't be in a rush, you know, to sort of announce a winner at this stage. I think it's a market that will, you know, it's very interesting. Whoever can get it right, you know, amongst the Big Four, certainly will be the winner.
So with that, the sentiment then, bottom line, should you still buy the shares? I mean, we've had this conversation before, but there's a lot of concern right now about the longevity of the bank's high growth figures. And with that starting to rear its head once again, this conversation props up about valuations. Is Capitec worth it at current levels?
So here's the trick, right? Looking at the growth in the past that they have been able to show over the last 20 years or so, and if you believe they can replicate that going forward, then it is a steal, right? But if you look at, you know, if you're starting from scratch today and looking forward, certainly in our view, the valuation is very high because we always try and focus on the former future and not on the past. It is trading very high compared to the Big Four. And if, for all intents and purposes, you know, let's face it, it is still pretty much a micro lender. Right, a big part of the earnings still comes from the micro lending. Yes, they are trying to diversify, you know, into SMEs, into business banking, and the traditional side of the business is actually doing very well. But at the core of it, it is still a micro lender. So for us, you know, we like the story, we like the business model, we like the quality of the business, but it's the valuation that is a problem. You know, it is very, very expensive for us.
Let's leave it there, Patrick. A pleasure chatting to you this morning. Thanks so much for your time. Patrick Matidi is Head of Equity and Balanced Funds at Aluwani Capital Partners.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Well, unfortunately, we've been unable to get a hold of Sam Mokorosi, who's head of origination and deals at the JSE today, to really put the spotlight on Signia's listing of an ETF on the JSE targeting China and Hong Kong. We'll try and get that conversation to you later in the week. We'll reschedule it. Also taking a look at how these ETF listings are starting to bolster activity, if at all, on the JSE. For now, though, that's where we leave the things for today. The show brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with their investment specialist. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Remember, we're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app at 6:30 a.m. and the podcast is available just after 7. Thanks to the team, Eddie and Nobutle, my guests, for their early morning contributions, and to you for listening. I'm Alicia Seckham. This is MoneyWeb Now, and we'll catch up again tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.